Parshas Noach. We read Beis Hashem in Shabbos. It's a very fascinating parsha on many levels, very difficult parsha on many levels. And Noach himself, I think, is very enigmatic in character in the eyes of Chazal, and based on the psukim in this parsha. It's hard to understand Noach. We just had 2 weeks ago on Rosh Hashanah, if you remember, in the Zichronos section of the Musaf Shmoneh Rosh Hashanah, you know, here the very majestic moment in the middle of the special Musaf Rosh Hashanah, we brought up Noach, you know, Gamis Noach, Bavo Zacharta, you know, and the Torah itself describes Noach as an Ish Tzadik Tomim, right? At the very beginning, first Pasuk, first Vav Pasuk Tes, of course, in Bereishis, Ela told us Noach, Ish Tzadik Tomim Ha'ibadur Sub, Esalukim is Halach Noach. Sounds like the ultimate praise, the ultimate description of somebody who's a great person. And indeed, the whole world is destroyed, and only Noach and his immediate family are saved. So we would tend to have, you know, a positive hand. We should have a very positive picture of Noach. And yet, there seems to be a sort of a parv kind of picture of him. And everybody who's ever studied anything about Noach knows the Rashi at the beginning of the Sedra, emphasizing the word bedorosav, right? Tom Tzadik Tomim, Noach is Tzadik Tomim bedorosav. So Rashi writes, Yeshmer Abosenu Darshanoso Lishvach. There are those who describe or who understand this pasuk as describing something praiseworthy about Noach. Why? Because Kol Shekain Shulahay B'Dor Tzadikim Tzadik Yosef. Here was Noach living in a time where everybody was wicked. Everybody kishkis Kol Basar is Dark Kol Haaretz. A couple of psukim later, right? I mean, here you have the whole world was corrupt. The whole world was base. The whole world was, you know, engaged in inappropriate activity. And here was one guy bucking the trend. That's not so simple. Chazal tell us, Adam Nimshach Achar Sivivav, a person is influenced by his environment. The man is a social animal, right? People are interested, are influenced by those around him. You want to associate, and you want to do things that impress other people. You want to behave in a way that other people like you and so on. That's a common human or a basic human need. So nobody wants to be the one person who does different than everybody else. And yet, that's what Noach had to do, because Noach was living in a time where he had no peer support, basically. Right? And yet he was still able to be a tzaddik. So again, Rashi says, Yesh Darshan, wow. You know, he was still able to be a tzaddik even under such conditions. I mean, would any of us have been able to do that? You know, wouldn't you at one point give in? You want to be one of the guys? You want to be in the crowd? You want to be, you know. And Noach was able to buck the tide. He was able to, you know, to go against what the rest of society was doing. So that's Noach tzaddik. That's why the Torah says B'dor Osav. Even B'dor Osav. Okay, good, beautiful. But we also know some understand the Torah is really saying this in a negative sense. Lefidoro hayatzadik, yeah, bedoro sav. Compared to the rest of the people in his generation, then he was an ish tzadik, right? Bedoro sav. Lefidoro hayatzadik. V'lohay bedor shel Avram lohay nechshav l'klum. Had he been in the door of Avram Avinu, he wouldn't have been anything next to Avram Avinu. Right? It was just compared to the rest of the folks who were in his generation that he was a tzaddik. So everybody knows these two interpretations. So I'd like to look at for a few minutes a simple question, really, trying to understand what's the reason, why would there be Yeshmer Abosenu Shedarshan L'Gnai? What would prompt some among Chazal to view Noach in a negative way? Read the simple reading of the passage, Noach ish tzaddik tamo habidor osav es alukim is alek Noach. What more can you say about a person? You know, I mean, no one else is described in the Chumash as a tzaddik. In our tradition, Yosef is called Yosef a tzaddik. In the Kabbalistic tradition, Yosef tzaddik, you know, but doesn't say in the Chumash, that title. Here, Noach is given a title, not only a tzaddik, but a tzaddik tomim, right? That tomim, we do find elsewhere, Avram, it says, Yisalak l'fonai, Yisomim, next week, Sedra, we have a general mitzvah, tomim tiyam l'shonal kecha, later in the Chumash, in Parshat Shoftim, but, you know, to describe somebody as a tzaddik tomim, I mean, yeah, so why would somebody, who would go ahead, what type of person would go ahead and say, well, you know, it says Bedorosa, that doesn't really, he wasn't such a tzaddik, was compared to the rest of his people, really, he was nothing. But why? What motivates somebody to say, I want you to imagine the following thing. Okay, I'll draw from experience as a high school, Rosh Hashiva, a high school principal. Imagine, I get up at the graduation. Okay, you all graduated high school. Close to graduating college, ready. But imagine a high school graduation, right? And everybody's in the big auditorium, and the parents are there, and the grandparents, and so on. And one boy is the valedictorian, and he's about to give the valedictorian speech. And how much nachas his parents have, and they're ready, they're right there when he's going to get up. They're going to take the pictures and the whole thing, right? And the principal gets up. And he says, "We're very proud to call upon our valedictorian so-and-so. And just before he speaks, I want everyone to know that, you know, this year was a particularly weak class. And, you know, so he was the best of this group. Okay, but you should know that, you know, if he would have been in the next year's class, he would never have been anywhere near the valedictorian." Well, who would do that, right? Would you say, it might be true. But even if it were true, like, who would say such a thing, right? You go up and say that, compared to the, you know, this year it's a weak team, so this guy got to be a starter. But if he would have been on a team from 5 years ago, he would have been a bench warmer, wouldn't have seen any action in the game. You wouldn't say that to somebody, right? What motivates Chazal to go ahead and you know, kind of like develop a negative approach to Noah? That's really what I, you know, want to look at. It's I don't think it's a simple answer, but I think it's a question that's worth examining. You know, there's some who want to say, want to be medayik in Rashi. If you look carefully at the words of Rashi, it says, "Yesh me rabuseinu darshin oso l'shvach." There are some among our rabbanim, right, among our talmud chachamim, who darshin in a positive way. And then it says, "V'yesh shadarshin oso l'gnai." It doesn't say yesh me rabuseinu shadarshin. Yesh is some. That's not the rabuseinu. Rabuseinu had darshin l'shvach. Some naysayer, you know, there's always people, you know, in the crowd. He's not so good, he's not that talented, he's not so funny, he's not such a great boy. There's always somebody who sits in and says that. That's not Yesh Merav Seinu, which is a cute diak in Rashi. The thing is, though, that these two opinions appear in the Gemara. Not Rashi's not fancy. Gemara and Sanhedrin, Daf Kuf Ches, you have two, you know, so you can't really say it's a nice diak in Rashi, but still, you know, we need to understand. So the question is, I think, to analyze this, we have to try and figure out, so what is it that we know about Noah altogether? You know, what do we know about Noah? I mean, yes, he was a good person. He called him to build a teva. So he builds a teva, fine. And, you know, his family is saved. It's interesting, and I'm not saying this is the reason, but, you know, Noah never speaks. The whole sedra, the whole discussion is on Noah never speaks until after he comes out of the teva, and, you know, he realizes that, you know, he got himself drunk and so on, and then whatever happened with Chum, it's not clear exactly what he did. Different opinions. But the first word that Noah says is Oror. It's a striking point. It's the first word it's not the first word he ever said. It's the first word that's in the Chumash that's recorded. Okay, that's a point to ponder. Okay, but in any event, we need to understand a little more about what Noah was, you know, who Noah was. And there's a very fascinating medrash that appears in the Medrash Rabbah at the end of Dvarim, in Parshas Zos HaBrocha. You know, it's a discussion, you know, an imaginary discussion, so to speak, between Moshe Rabbeinu and Noah. Okay? And Moshe Rabbeinu, it doesn't fit within the picture that you usually have of Moshe Rabbeinu, but it's a medrash, so I'm going to share it with you. So the medrash says that Moshe Rabbeinu and Noah were having a conversation of who's greater, and who has greater zchus, right? And Noah said, I mean, the whole world was destroyed, right? I was the only person in the entire world to be saved. I mean, me and my immediate family, right? Or in my school. So, you know, how can you compare anything to that? He says to Moshe, right? I mean, you did lots of good things, Moshe, but the entire world was destroyed. I was the only one saved. That's got to be something special. And Moshe answered, he said to him, you know what you're like? You are like the captain of the ship. And when the ship went down, you made sure to save yourself, but you didn't work on saving the rest of the people. When the ship was going down, right, the Chet HaEgel and other occasions, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm fed up with these people and so on, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, I'm going to destroy them and make a new nation out of you. What did I do? I got up and said, no. If you're not going to forgive them, then wipe me out, then take care of, get me out also. Right? I was going to go down with the ship if I'm going to go down. I'm not in abandon, and that's why I'm greater. That's what the Medrash says. As a side point, I'll share an interesting story that I once heard. The Panovich Rav, Kahneman. So he built the Panovich Yeshiva into what it is today, with a primary yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael. Many don't sure visit. I think the street there is called Rechov Rav Kahneman, right? And he was European, and he was, you know, he came from the Panovich Yeshiva in Europe, and he basically rebuilt the yeshiva in Bnei Brak into one of the primary Torah institutions of the world, big buildings and so on and so forth. And the story I heard was the Panovich Rav would run around the world, basically, fundraising for the budget of the yeshiva. Even when he was an older man, and it was difficult for him to travel, he would still go and collect money and so on and so forth. And finally, they tried to pressure him, somebody else will go, you know, we have to schlep to America, you have to go here, you know, and he came to America to raise money for the yeshiva, okay? In fact, I once heard from someone told me, Rabbi Wein, Bar Wine was a Rav, and he used to be a Rav in Miami. And the Panovich Rav came to Miami to raise money, and Bar Wine is very proud because he just built a brand new, beautiful building in the shul in Miami. And I don't know the shuls in Miami, but at that time, anyway, this is many years ago, obviously. So the Panovich Rav was surprised that so much money was sunk into building a building here. So Rav Wine, I didn't hear this, but someone told me, Rav Wine responded, of all the Panovich, you're building a beautiful building there. Why? So the Panovich Rav answered, because that's lo olam vo'ed. That's an Eretz Yisrael. That's an Eretz Yisrael. It's ours forever. Here, right now there's a big community here, but who knows? In 50 years, 75 years, if we have a bowling alley here, or a movie theater, something like that. I'm not even use those examples. But we know communities, people move on, communities move, things shift. Who knows what's going to be, right? But anyway, but the Panovich have traveled around. And they asked him, he was very devoted to running around raising money for the budget yeshiva. At one point they said, you should sit and learn and let somebody else go handle it. So he referred to this medrash. And he said, most of my friends and chaverim and chavrusas were wiped out on the Holocaust. For whatever reason, HaKadosh Baruch Hu spared me. I don't know why. My yeshiva and so many people were killed, we all know. Okay? And for whatever reason, I was spared. And this comment of Moshe Rabbeinu to Noach in the Medrash was haunting to me. You took care of yourself, right? But you didn't take care of the others. And I have that haunting feeling. I managed to get out, but so many others didn't. And therefore, I've got to do what I can now to build up, right? To build yeshivas, to build Torah learning, because I don't want to have someone have that taina to me, that I took care of myself and I didn't take care of the klal. Interesting point. But in any event, that's the discussion according to the Medrash, between Noach and Moshe Rabbeinu. So from that Medrash, we get an insight that there's a taina on Noach that he was not successful in transmitting his beliefs to anybody else, maybe outside his own family. Right? That was a taina to Noach. And maybe we can begin to understand that's why Yeshua was saying, Shadarshim Lignai, people have a somewhat less than stellar image of Noah. And we think about it further, we know that according to the Medrash, based on the Psukim, there was a long time between the time HaKadosh Baruch Hu announced that he's going to bring a Mabul, and he tells Noah to start building a Teva, and the time when the Mabul actually begins. 120 years. It's a long time. And again, the years before the Mabul were measured the same way as years were now, that's not my topic right now. But the bottom line is that there was a long time. Why? So we know, Chazal tell us. So people should see what's going on. They'll ask him, okay, and they're like, what are you doing? Well, you're building an ark. Well, HaKadosh Baruch Hu will destroy the world. Oh, they'll be frightened. They'll be inspired. They'll talk to him about it. They'll do tshuva. Okay, right? So he had a long time to try and win people over. So exactly how many people did he win over? Zero. Right? In 120 years. Right? However we measure a year. But imagine 120 Shabbos Shuvah drushes and 120 Shabbos Hagadol drushes and 120. And influence nobody? I mean, nobody? Not one person all that time? What's going on here? I mean, somebody. Shalachara. Somebody. And all the time, whether years are the same as our years, but it was a long time, Noah was successful in transmitting values and winning over exactly nobody. How could it be? Evidently, and this is a suggestion, okay, evidently, it's not because, it's hard to imagine, he had no talent, he had no ability, he was a boring speaker, who knows, he had something. So it's possible to suggest that Noah didn't do the job properly. And this, I saw the name of Rameir Shapiro. So Rameir Shapiro, of course, is, I guess, best known today as founded the Daf Yomi movement in the 1920s. He came up with the idea of the Daf Yomi and publicized it at the convention of the Rabbanim, the Agudas Rabbanim, and so on. And that's what took off. Right? Today, of course, a very popular Daf Yomi. More popular, I think, than Rameir Shapiro. Imagine. He was also, of course, the Rosh Yeshiva of the Yeshiva Chachmei Lublin, which the Yeshiva building is still there. I've been there. So, Rameir Shapiro points out to something at the very end of his sedra, very interesting. We all know when HaKadosh Baruch Hu decides he's not going to destroy the world again. So he makes a siman, an os, and that's the rainbow, the keshes. Okay, the keshes was actually created before, the Ramban explains, but Lamaisa, the sign, there's going to be no more mabul to destroy the world. There's kashti nasati ve'anan, right at the end of the sedra. So Rameir Shapiro points out that, if you think about it, we know, and again, the rainbow is a scientific phenomenon, but it happens after a very dark, certain things have to be in place in order for there to be a rainbow. And one thing that has to be in place, it has to be dark beforehand. The clouds, it happens more in the summer because you have these dark storm clouds move in for a short period of time and then it pours for 20 minutes, you know, and then afterwards the rainbow, right? That's often, at least around here, we see a rainbow. It's after the darkest point. So Meir Shapiro says the following. Noach simply did not believe that he was going to be able to win anybody over. That's why he didn't. Because he looked around and he saw and he understood it. Well, what's going to be with these people? Like Hishris Kolboser is dark all orit, the Pasuk says. I mean, you had every witch type in Gezel and then Haverim and Alamokum, right? The Gemara works out, you know, since they were punished for this, it must mean they were commanded, right? The shows the seventh say Noah. One has the Sanhedrin, well, exactly the Mokor is the seventh say Noah, you know, maybe from here, right? But at the end of the day, obviously they were commanded, so they didn't do it. And it was very depraved and very base. And Noah looked around and he said, forget it. Forget it. I can't. And as a result of that, Taka, he was unsuccessful. Maybe for 120 years he tried, but Amir Shapiro suggests he was going through the motions. Yeah, you know, okay, I'll go, I'll give a speech, I'll talk to somebody. But he didn't feel it in his heart. Okay, he didn't feel it in his heart. He wasn't confident that he could be successful. And therefore, he wasn't successful. We all know that if you're confident you can't do something, you won't be able to do it. Okay, if you are confident you can do it, you have a much better chance. If you resign yourself, I'm not going to be able to do it, then you're not going to be able to do it. And Noach was resigned. And I'm not saying I blame him. I'm not saying I would be any different. He looked around. He saw what he saw in the society around him. And he said, forget it. Not this group. Okay? And therefore, he never really tried. And that's why he was unsuccessful. And that was the time that Moshe had against him. And that's the time that maybe that's what prompts Yesh Marab Hoseinu, that he wasn't as great. What's it got to do with the Keshes? So says of Meir Shapiro, HaKadosh Baruch Hu showed him that particular sign of all things. Why did he pick, especially we learned that the rainbow was created earlier by Shesh Mei Breshes. So why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu pick that as the symbol that's not going to be another marble? Because the rainbow, we all know, is something that is beautiful. You know, we look, we're not supposed to, we gaze at a rainbow, but we see it, we make a bracha, right? Meir Shapiro says you make a bracha when you see the whole arch. Like, you know, if you just see part of it, you don't make the bracha. Okay, but then we make a bracha on a rainbow. But it is something beautiful. But it comes after a dark moment. So Meir Shapiro suggests that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was telling Noah, you made a big mistake. You made a big mistake. Out of the bleakest and darkest moment can come something that radiates colors. That's why you picked this Keshes, says Meir Shapiro, as the symbol to tell Noah, you made a mistake. Yes, tzaddik tamim in terms of your personal behavior, gevaldik. But you gave up on the people of your door. And that's exactly the message that Moshe Rabbeinu said to Noah. You gave up on the people. Not that he didn't try. He didn't try hard enough because he wasn't into it. He didn't think he could do it. And again, he didn't think he could do it because we saw around him. I'm sure some of us have that experience sometimes in life too. Oh, I forget this guy. I'm never going to talk to him. But you never know. You never know. Sometimes the right word, the right approach from the darkest thing can come the most beautiful color. In fact, the Yerushalmi, the very beginning of Brachos, the very beginning of Shas, Yerushalmi has a famous discussion to Tanoim Amram. I think Amram went up to a mountain, the Mount Arbel. Arbel's right outside of Tiberia, those who know. It's a mountain, little mountain range here. So they went up and they were walking there and they saw the sunrise. Someone's rising over the Kinneret. Those who know Tiberia, right? It's a beautiful sunrise. Now, anyways, we're up for sunrise. That's not a big kunst now. Sunrise to Shkia, the next day was, 7:15. Right? It's no big kunst in Davin, secret now. But, the other times there is a big kunst. Right? So you get up early, you see, it's not that all of a sudden it's dark and all of a sudden the sun comes out. What you see, and perhaps you've seen it on a plane, or if you get up early in the morning, walk to the shoreline and see it, to see a beautiful sunrise. There's like a ray over here, and there's a ray over there. You can see a little bit, and then you have the whole, it's called Amud HaShachar, you have the whole horizon becomes light, and eventually the ball of the sun pops up on the very edge of the horizon, right? But first you have, perhaps that's what Chazal referred to as Ayelos HaShachar, in terms of Zmanim, and so you see rays popping up along the horizon. So one of the Amoraim said to the other, again, the Rishonim, I think in the first Daf in Brachos, it says, Kachi Gulosan Shli Yisrael. That is the geula. That's the way the geula will come also. Okay? It'll come kima. We're not going to be all of a sudden geula, bingo. It'll be in stages. Right? There'll be a flicker of hope here, a ray over there, a ray of light over here, right? Then the whole geula will come thundering in. But at the beginning, there'll be little signs. The same idea after the darkest moment, after the darkest part of the night. Okay? You go traveling. Maybe it's not so much true today because of our metropolitan lifestyle. But, you know, when you travel from place to place, you want to get to from town A to town B. I think there's even a medrash like that. The father was walking with his son, and there was a long trip. You want to get to the next town. How do we know we're going to get there? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? You know, we do that also, right? And if you have little kids, you get in the car. We've been driving for 5 minutes. Are we there yet? No, we still have 3.5 hours to go. We just left. But okay, but people are impatient. Children are impatient. Are we there yet? Are we there yet? You know when you're near a town? When you see the cemetery. The cemetery is outside the town. When you come to, oh, now we're near the town. Right? From the darkest, from the, you know, the saddest, comes the light. That's the idea. So the Meir Shapiro says that Noach was given this simon by HaKadosh Baruch Hu, as if to say, you made that mistake. Even from the worst can come the best. Don't give up. Don't abandon people. Now, I heard the name of Rav Huttner, an interesting idea. Also from Parshas Noach, I think it ties into this. He said, I think it's in, I couldn't find it, I was actually looking this morning, I think it's in one of the Pachad Yitzchaks. Rav Huttner was the Rosh Yeshiva of Chaim Berlin in Brooklyn, and they had a set of Svarim called Pachad Yitzchak on Mamarim, on Yom Tovim, and Shabbos, and other things. Anyway, I couldn't find it, I did a quick look, but it may be there. I'm pretty sure it is. But anyway, Rav Huttner says the following. He asks, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, when he gives a mabul, he makes a shvur, right? He says, I'm never going to destroy, I make a bris, I'm never going to destroy the world again. Right? Let me find the exact pasuk. Here it is. And he didn't make his bris, and so on. He says, I'm not going to do this again. Okay? So what they ask, well, 1 second. If the people deserve it, if the world deserves it, then why not? And if the world doesn't deserve it, then he's not going to do it. Right? In other words, what do you need haftacha? In other words, if the world never sinks to that level again, so then you don't need such a bris. They're not going to deserve it, so he's not going to bring it. On the other hand, if they do deserve it, so why wouldn't they bring it? Why wouldn't they bring another mabul? So he says that among the many other things that changed with the mabul in terms of human nature, in terms of the nature of the world, and a lot of things in nature were different after the mabul, okay, was also the potential of people changed. You know, the what basically he's saying is that it'll never happen, okay, again, that there'll be people who could sink to such a low level that people can, the human beings can influence each other in that way, lira, to that point. That I'll never allow again. But at the same time, those people also had tremendous potential to reach unbelievable heights. We don't have that either. Okay, human nature has changed. We can't reach the same heights, but we also can't sink to the same depths. Okay, and that's what he's basically saying. It's not going to be destroyed. It's not going to be okay. It'll never happen again. That's the avtocha, because there won't be people who will be able to get the whole world and so on to sink to such a level. So you had this, but it's gamazel mazel sokim, right? It says in Kohelet. So we can't reach the same lofty spiritual heights. Okay, at least not as a general rule, maybe you have certain individuals, but really not, certainly not the influence, even perhaps the emotion, maybe it was different. I mean, Adam Rishon was Yitzir Kapo Shal Kodesh Baruch Hu, right? So people can't live, and that works out, people don't live as long, and the health changes, you can't reach the same heights, but you also don't sink to the same depths. That's what they said. So what Noach misunderstood, if this is true, I'm now bringing that into our discussion, that Noach saw that Kishkis Kol Basar, they had sunk to a tremendous depth. What he failed to understand was that they could also be raised to the greatest of heights. Okay, that from the depths can come the greatest of heights. That's changing now. We can't reach the same depths, we can't reach the same heights either. Just as a side point, that's why, you know, in the Hodul Hashem, in the what's called Halal HaGadol, right? That's the 26 the Kilon Chasdos, right? That capital film, which has all the Kilon Chasdos in it, starts Hodol Hashem Kitokan Wazal, Hodol Kel Shemaim is the end. So in the middle, it mentions all, and it singles out two kings, right? L'sichon Melech Amor Kilon Chasdos, Og Melech Boshem Kilon Chasdos. Why are they mentioned? Why did they get singled out? Why not? There were 31 Melachim in Eretz Canaan before the Jews conquered. It's listed in Sefer Yoshua. So why these, you know, why were they singled out? So I want to say they were the first ones. But so we have a Medrash that Sichon and Og were the two Nephilim, the two giants who survived the Mabul. Okay, they survived the Mabul. And okay, we learn Og hung on to the boat, whatever it was. Sichon maybe was born on the boat. The different shittas that cannot, that Chom violated the rule, and he had Tashmish on the boat. The different opinions how it came about. But Sichon and Og survived. If that's the case, so they were part of that door, perhaps, that had that potential both to reach the great heights, but also to reach the worst depth. And therefore, when Sichon and Og were eliminated, that was the end of an era. That's why the Sichon and Og are mentioned in this capital. This is a side point. But in any event, what we're saying today is that Noach is error, and that maybe is what prompts this approach, you know, Yesha Darshan Lignai, is that Noach failed to see the potential in people. And therefore he failed to elevate people. He tried, but he went through the motions. He didn't do it. And he didn't realize that from the greatest depths can come the greatest heights. From the bleakest, from the darkest cloud can come the most beautiful rainbow. So, one of the, Musa messages of this parasha then, is that we too, you never give up on somebody. You never give up on somebody. Okay? The people who disappoint us in life, we have siblings, you may have children, you know, in some ways, this, you know, later on when you're older, and so have children that disappoint you in life. You may have friends that disappoint you. But you never give up. Because you can always be a positive influence on somebody. And you never know. I tell this to the boys in high school. You know, you notice things. You walk over, you see somebody else. Somebody seems to be depressed. Somebody seems to be upset about something. So you say to them, is everything okay? And a person may say to you, yeah, fine, leave me alone. Okay. Well, you're going to respect his privacy. Okay. Doesn't mean it was wrong to ask. You probably had his own. How many times has the person, well, you know, I'm upset, I did pull in this test, now my mother's going to be mad at me, or I had a fight with somebody, whatever it is. And then, well, you talk it out, and then you go for a slice of pizza, you know, and the person's cheered up. How many times have you had that? You don't give up on a person. You don't give up on a person's Yiddishkeit. You don't give up on a person's neshama. You don't give up on a person's sensitivity and feelings. We don't realize we can be, each of us, without major effort, it can change somebody's life and be a positive influence. I remember many years ago, you know, and you'd be surprised. Many years ago, when they first came out with the English translation of Slichus, the art school Slichus. When I grew up, you probably never seen this, but the Slichus, maybe they still have them here, were these white pamphlets, okay, where you have every third word, you had to switch to, every time it was Kel Melech, you had to jump to another page, and then... It was impossible. You had to keep flipping back and forth. Now they have, first of all, now they printed all Hebrew, now they have it in English. You know, you can understand what's going on in the Slichus. So I was davening before I had my own shul. I'm not even sure I was married yet, but maybe I was married. But I was davening in shul, and they had a few copies of those. They didn't have that many of them, you know. And so I try to come on time for davening, especially during Slichus week. So I came, and I took one of those, because I have to admit, I don't understand all the slichas, it's poetry and so on, so I like to look in English sometimes to see what's going on. I recommend it to everybody, unless you're so fluent in Hebrew, you understand all this, you know, intricate poetry that combines the slichas. Okay, good, but I don't. So I use English slichas. But so I got it, I was davening, davening started, and then not long after, whatever, at some point, an older gentleman walked in, older than I, certainly, you know, I came in. And he took the pamphlet slichas, because she only had a handful of these, and I was lucky, I got one. And somehow, standing there, I saw the guy was completely lost. He was completely lost what's going on. So, you know, I said to myself, let me give him the one that they don't have to flip back and forth. I mean, I like the English, but at least I know how to say the slichas, I know. So I gave it to him. There wasn't a major issue, I gave it to him. And that's when I took the other one. Later on, I found out from the rabbi of the shul, the person said it, what a wonderful shul must be. He was so taken. Like, I did nothing. What did I do? I gave a guy a seal. I didn't think twice about it. I'm not such a tzaddik. I just saw the guy was struggling, so I gave him that one. I took a different one. And the person was so taken. He said, you know, and he told the rabbi, like, it inspired him to say slichus and inspired his tshuva. You know, I did nothing. Mamish, nothing. It's a stupid little nothing. That's, you know, you can influence somebody. Mamish, just with your behavior. I'll end with this. Okay, see you to the time. So I'll end with this. I've told this story over many times. I said over my shul many times. I just said it on Yontif, my shul. You know, that there was a story that I heard. I don't know the details. I'm not sure exactly what's fully true or not, but apparently there's a story of a person who went to Eretz Yisrael. Okay? And non-observant. And he came to the Kol Samaravi with the tour bus or whatever it was, his tour guide, he's taking pictures, and he saw a Jew davening there. And the guy was davening with such hislavos and such kavana that this man was taken. And he said, wow, I wish I could do that. This guy is so connected to God. I'd like to do that. And when he came back, he came from Texas. And he came back to Texas. And he was interested. Let me see what this Jewish prayer is about. You know, he was taken by this. And he didn't even know where to turn. So he went to the kosher butcher shop, okay, figuring they're religious Jews there. And he asked, is there any place around here that teaches classes and, you know, about Jewish prayer? So the guy in the counter, from guy, said, well, there's a kibbutz organization here, some shul, whatever it was. So the guy started to go. To make a long story short, again, the way I heard it, this man, this Jew who came to the, was a man of means, a wealthy man. And he started to get involved in this organization, and he gave a lot of money to build up this whole Kiruv operation in the shul in Texas. It was very successful, and due to the money given by this guy. So imagine now, this Jew who was davening, whoever he was, at the Kol Samaravi, you know, was just davening with Kavana. Imagine after 120 years, he's standing before the Bezen Shalala, and they said, okay, I'm going to go over your merits and your demerits. Your merits, and Yus Chus, there's a big Kiruv operation going on in Texas. And you're a merit. And the guy says, you know, thanks, but, you know, it's got a mistake. I don't know what Texas is. I've never been to Texas. It's not me. You got the wrong information. No, because you just davening properly can influence somebody. Right? You never know. So that's what I'm trying to say. We don't abandon hope. The Taina against Noach, maybe, and in a certain sense, Noach is every man. It was great in terms of his own personal conduct. Tzadik Tomei, don't take away from that. But maybe the way the Chazal have a somewhat skewed view of Noach is because of this point that in that Medrash, he didn't do anything for his door. He didn't do anything for his door because he gave up. You never give up on another person. You never know. Even from the darkest cloud can come the most beautiful rainbow. Okay, I wish I went on a good Shabbos.
Thank you very much.
Very well.